So what does wellness mean to you?
Welcome back to Wellness Wednesdays. I am your host, Eric Pilar. This week, another special guest all the way across the country, but this gentleman is as you'll be able to tell by his wonderful accent, he's not from here, but we're glad that he's here. Welcome to the podcast, Leandro.
Hey, how are you, Eric? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's a small world. So I met Leandro through some work stuff years ago, and I've always kind of followed his progress. I knew that he enjoyed working, but one of his passions was winemaking, and now he's an assistant winemaker with Mission Hill Winery out in BC. And how did you get into the wine business?
Oh, well, it's been a very long journey. It's taking me probably 10 years to be where I am now. Wine has been part of my life since the very beginning. As you say, well, I'm not from Canada, as everybody can tell by the accent. I'm from Argentina, from Mendoza, wine country. My family owns some vineyards there. My great-grandfather made wine. My grandfather made wine. So wine's been around my life since the very beginning. And so after studying agriculture in university, I knew that definitely what I wanted to do was to make wine. And well, now 10 years later, after being in Canada, I'm able to work in one of the most interesting wine regions of the world, and definitely in Canada.
So what makes that region in BC interesting in terms of wine?
Well, the main thing is the weather. We have very good growing conditions. So for those who don't know, the Okanagan Valley, this is in the interior part of BC. And it has a very unique weather that is very dry. So if you picture the Sonoma Desert in Mexico, that desert go all the way to the north, and there is a small tip that get into Canada, and that's where the Okanagan Valley is. This dryness makes the Okanagan Valley a very good place to grow grapes because we have very low pest and disease pressure, so we can do a very clean and nice farming. And also we have the dryness and the sun that we need to ripe grapes. That is the most important material to make wine. Like, to make good wine, you need good grapes. You cannot make good wine from bad grapes. So the place where you choose to grow the grapes is key to obtain a good wine.
So we're going to back up a little bit and go back to your growing up in Argentina, where wine is, you know, it's probably one of the biggest exports, if I'm not mistaken, from Argentina. And how is that part of the family culture? Like, how old were you when you started drinking wine? It's very similar to Quebec. Like, I mean, I've been drinking wine since my teens. Not a lot, but here and there at dinner and stuff. And how was that growing up in Argentina?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Argentina, we have, like, similar to Canada, a lot of immigration. So Argentina is a country done by immigrants. And our biggest immigrant groups came from Spain and Italy, and a little bit from France as well. So when they went to Argentina, they brought not only their customs and habits, but also they brought some vines. And over the years, they discovered in Argentina what were the best regions to grow vines. One of them were Mendoza, next to the Andes, where the growing conditions are quite similar to the Okanagan Valley. So it's a hot summers and dry. So growing, like, my great-grandfather had some vineyards, and that's what he did. He just grew vines, and he would make a little bit of wine at home, kind of like in a very traditional way, nothing too fancy, but he would drink that wine every day, and my grandmother and grandfather learned to make wine from them as well. So yeah, wine is part of our daily life, and that means that you will have it at lunch, you have it at dinner. Maybe when you're young, you start to taste a little bit. Obviously, when you're young, can be kind of weird to drink wine. But when you see that every party or family event, everybody's drinking wine and you want to be part of it, when you try, you start drinking it and somehow you start liking it. And there's also a lot of, like, a culture on wines mean that it's a way to connect to your family, to your heritage, as well to the land. And that's, I think, is pretty magic about it.
So that brings up my next question. What makes it so magical about this nectar of gods? Like, What is it about it?
Well, if you think like nowadays, everything is so technological, everything is so like manufactured, but the way we're making wine is pretty much the same that it has been done the last 2,000 or 3,000 years. So basically we're using the same varieties. When you open, let's say, a Cabernet Sauvignon, well, the Cabernet Sauvignon you're opening is the same variety that a Cabernet Sauvignon was done like 300 or 400 years ago when that variety appears. Innovation is present in the wine industry, but at the same time, there are some practices that definitely don't change. So I think that's what makes it very magic, is that you're drinking something that is the same, that's been done during centuries, and everybody like it the same way.
And I know, for example, in Canada, winemaking is fairly new in the grand scheme of things. It's only been around for 40 or 50 years. How long has it been around in Argentina? Because Argentina is still part of the New World. No, it's not like France and, you know, in Italy and all that stuff. So can you give us just a quick overview of the winemaking world for those at home who don't know?
Yeah, so Argentina, like the rest of Latin America and Central America, start making wines when the Spaniards arrived. And also you had to think that wine was used for religious purposes, to celebrate mass. So were the priests that were doing the missions and evangelization of the First Nations that were bringing. Initially, they would try to bring wine, but obviously it was very hard. So then they find out that the best way was to try to produce wine. And that's how, for example, we have the oldest winery in America is in Mexico. And I think it's from the 1500s. So it's very old place. So that's how it got expanded. Before that, like, I think in the bit around like 2,000 years ago, the wine is not actually didn't start in France or even in Italy. The wine started in the Middle East. And it was a beverage that was used because it has some health and like medicine attributes. Then the Roman Empire discovered the wine and they spread around all Europe. And the main reason why they did that is because they needed to clean the water or to make safe the water that they wanted to drink. How can I say in a different way? Many years ago, it was very dangerous to drink water. Now, for us, it may sound crazy, but yeah. Back then, like, not all water sources were reliable. And a way to make the water safe to drink was add a little bit of wine. Because they didn't know how, but they knew that the wine will kill or make the water safe. So, basically, that's what also helped the expansion of the wine in the world.
And it's so funny because, I mean, wine is... almost every culture has got their own kind of, love affair with wine. Whether, you know, obviously if you're, if you grew up in Canada, slightly different, I'm sure. And I remember living in Europe, you know, wine's probably a little more prominent there. And I don't know, I've never actually lived in South America, but I can only assume that, again, wine is very part of the culture, part of, you know, living well. What do you think is so special about wine that makes it the glue for every kind of celebration, it seems?
Well, I think it's a simple beverage. So anybody can make wine in their house. It's not rocket science. A lot of people try to ferment different fruit juices at their house. And I think that would make it very magical. Like everybody can relate. Everybody understand it. Everybody has somehow grow with wine around themselves. It maybe was not their parents, but maybe an uncle or an aunt who would like to drink wine for maybe Christmas or for birthday celebrations. So it's something that no matter where you come from, you definitely can relate and probably have a positive experience. Like usually people when drinking, they're talking, they're sharing a nice meal. I don't think anybody had like a very bad experience with enjoying a glass of wine with a friend or a family member.
And so can you tell us a little bit about what goes into making some good wine? I mean, there's obviously you can get a kit at Costco and make wine in your basement, but that's not traditional making. What goes into like the real good kind of stuff that you can make?
Well, I always say the same. I think that we winemakers, definitely we cannot make magic. So to make a good wine, you need good grapes. You need good ingredients. It's like when you're making a meal, you need good ingredients. So to make a good wine, you need good grapes. And for that, you need good farmers that spend time first looking at the best sites to grow grapes, and second, to taking care of those grapes. We are quite limited in terms of once we get the grapes into the winery, what we can do. No matter where you are, wine making is very regulated in terms of what you can add. When some people think, oh, well, this wine smells like apricots, let's say, or smells like vanilla, and they think that we add something to give that flavor. Well, definitely, we don't do that. We are not allowed, and nobody does it. And we winemakers try to drive the process in the way we think is the best, but we know that to have a good wine, the only way to do it is to start with good grapes. Good grapes are those ones that are going to have intensity, they're going to have flavor, they're going to have aromas, they're going to have concentration. And based on that is how we can achieve to get a good wine. And definitely, if we have bad grapes, we cannot make good wines, for sure.
So what makes a good grape? How long does it take to grow grapes? And because, I mean, obviously, it's not the same grapes that you'd get at the grocery store. So what
exactly?
So just take us back, because you're in this every day. But for someone at home that likes to enjoy wine, well, what can you tell us about kind of the art form of winemaking?
Yeah, exactly. So the vines are a perennial crop. So you put it 1 year and it will take you around 2 or 3 years to start producing grapes. And vine can last up to 200 years. Depending on Europe, you have vines that are very old. Here in Canada, we have winters that every 25 to 30 years sometimes force us to replant them. But so the grapes take 1 year to grow. But what the interesting part with vineyards that over time, the vineyards start becoming better and better to producing grapes. And this is the result because the roots over time go deeper and deeper and deeper. They can explore more the soil and they can extract more minerals that then are going to help for the flavor in the grapes. But there are a lot of different practices as well that can be done in the vineyards to assure that we have good grapes. The most important one that all the winemakers we insist is the amount of grapes that you take from a block. So normally if you're producing tomatoes or you're producing peaches, you think, well, the more I get, the better. Where the grapes is actually the only crop where you really want to be sure that you don't produce too much, because too much means more dilution of the flavors. So the idea is that you want to get a vine that is in equilibrium, that's going to give enough fruit, but also have enough leaves and a sufficient canopy that's going to help you to ripe the grapes in a good way. So the key is to be sure that you get enough to be commercial viable, but also you want to be sure that you don't get like a hard too much grapes, because then you end up having a dilution, and basically you have grapes that taste nothing. And the varieties that we use to make wines is the same species that the ones that you can buy at the grocery store to eat. But there are varieties that have been chosen to make wine because normally they have smaller berries, what means more concentration of flavors, because many of the interesting components are on the skins of the grapes. And also they're going to produce less grapes.
All right, so now I get some wonderful grapes from your vineyard. How do you go from grapes to this lovely nectar of gods?
So, well, we can talk about two processes, like for red wines and white wines. The main difference that on the white wines, we're going to remove the skins at the very beginning of the process, where in the reds, we're going to keep the skins because the color is only in the skins. So for white wines, we take the skins, the grapes, we remove the stems, that is the green part that holds all the berries. We press all the berries, and then we get a juice. It's a mass that is very sweet, has some acidity, and have some flavor component, but not all of them. Many of them are present, but they're linked to sugar, so they're there, but you can't smell them. And then we're going to put them under fermentation. And it's the yeast that's going to convert the sugar into alcohol, but also it's going to release these new aromas that's going to make this big change. Because if you smell grape juice, you will see that smell very different to what wine usually smells.
Yeah,
once we finish the fermentation. Sorry?
I think I like wine better than grape juice. How long does it take to ferment that stuff?
It all depends, but you can say it takes between 1 week to a month. Depends. So all those variables, we use them to play, because it's not the same to ferment wine at 16 degrees than at 25 degrees. So obviously, the hotter it is, the faster is the fermentation, but then the result that we get is different.
Okay.
So that's one of the variables that we can use. In case of the reds, we keep the skins during the fermentation, and we try to mix the tank to extract the color from the skins and also the tannins that are going to give the body and the astringency to the wine. The more we extract, the bigger the wine it is and the bigger aging potential that the wine will have, speaking like in general terms. Then we can decide to put the red wines, for example, into barrels or not, and the white wines as well. We can decide either to ferment in white in barrels or put it directly into tank. But you have to think that it's a process that will take you probably at least 3 to 4 months minimum since you pick the grapes until you can put the wine into the bottle. And that's speaking about white. For red, usually it takes even longer.
So, like, let's say you're, are you still, like, now you're selling last year's wine kind of thing?
Well, here we have, for example, we're bottling wines that are being produced the last vintage in 2016, but also we're bottling wines that are being produced in the 2015 vintage.
Okay.
So time is key. It's very important to develop the bouquet or the different aromas in the wine. So sometimes it's worth to keep the wine either in the barrel, in the tank, or even in the bottle. For example, a few weeks ago, we released our top wine that was 2013. So it was 2 years in barrel, and then it was almost 2 years in the bottle. And now we think, okay, now is a good time that we can release it and consumers are going to enjoy it. And maybe also they can decide to keep it in the cellar and don't open it for another 5 years. The wine is alive, so the wine continue evolving in the bottle. Obviously, if you leave it too much, can end up being vinegar, what is not good. But sometimes it's worth to hold in the bottle to get more interesting and more complex aromas that are going to appear over time.
So how do you define? How do you decide if you should keep it or drink it?
Well, this tasting. So we constantly are tasting. If it is in barrel or in tank, we follow it. Normally, we do once a month. And once we have into bottle, we the winemakers here, and we have our sales department that help us with that too. We open a bottle every 3 months, let's say, to see how the wine is evolving. And if we see
just so you know, if you need anyone else to help you out with that tasting, I'd be willing to fly out to BC to help.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, normally we have a lot of volunteers for that, but yeah, no problem. and it's a very interesting exercise, and something very important is that all these kind of decisions are done by a team. It's not just one person, because our palate and our tasting skills can vary with the day. So it's not the same when you are like super happy, you're going to taste a wine, you think, oh, this is wonderful. Sometimes you are too tired or you are sad or something's going on in your life and you taste a wine and you feel, oh, well, this tastes nothing. So all these decisions are done like by a group of people. Because I think that's something that everybody should know, is that the way you taste a wine is impacted by your mood, by your age, your personality, and also by your culture as well.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And I've been reading up a lot on wine, and yeah, and so much goes into. And then you and I can both be very good wine tasters, like we can be both special wine tasters, but I can think one wine is amazing. and you can think one wine is terrible. And we both can be right. I mean, it's whatever. We all have different palates. But it's funny because most people, when you go to the liquor store, the wine store, you always have ratings from these famous wine tasters, but it doesn't always, you know, sometimes you can get a wine, it's a 92 by some lady, and I pick it up and I was like, this is not good. And then some other wine, it could be, you know, it could have no ratings, but I think it's the best wine since the 60s. So.
Yeah, I agree on that. And I would like to say that going to back to one of your previous questions, like we all can relate to wine and it's the opinion of everybody is important. So if you like a wine, that's fine. Like, obviously, reviews are very important. We use them in the industry, and they're a good tool sometimes when you don't know a wine to say, okay, well, this wine got this score, probably is good. But the own experience is also very important. And over time, people get to know, okay, I like this wine. I have had it before. I know that if I buy it, I'm going to get what I want. And that's important, definitely.
So what has there been any cool technology that's kind of changed the way that we do wine recently? Because I know you talked about it's pretty much the same process, but is there any way that we can use technology to create better or more consistent wines?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the nice tools that we have, they're very expensive, but for example, we have it here at Mission Hill, is the optical sorter machine. So all the wineries that are trying to produce high-quality wines, what they do is that they receive the grapes from the vineyard, and they make the grapes, usually are the bunches, but also can be the berries, through a table, and they sort, and they can remove any materials that they don't want, like if something like, I don't know, a nail went inside the basket, or those berries that are kind of like dry, or they're getting rotten, etc. So this normally has been done by people, but now we have the technology that basically we can de-stem, remove the green part of the bunch, get all the berries, and with a machine, this machine see individually each berry and can remove those berries that we don't want. And this is done with a huge speed. So basically, we're getting sure that everything that goes into a tank is at the most high quality. And before, this was not possible. So, yeah, this is a huge improvement in terms of cost plus the quality that we can get. So the wines over time are becoming more and more and more clean. Another big jump that was done like a few years ago, quite a few years ago, was the use of stainless steel in wineries. So wine is now way more cleaner than the way before. And that also changed the profile of the wines a lot.
So then how come like the most expensive wine is wine from like, you know, 1960s and whatnot?
Well, because in that case, what you have is that you have the aging in the bottle. That is a process that needs time. And there's no way that we can accelerate that process. And I don't think there's any interest in accelerating that process. So when you open a bottle like from 1960 or 70, let's say, that wine was in bottle for 40 years, let's say, and develop some aromas and flavors that were only possible to develop in the bottle. Because the wine, when it's in the bottle, is not completely sealed. You have a cork that's going to allow tiny, small quantities of oxygen going inside the bottle. And that's going to help with the evolution of the wine. And that needs time.
So, I mean, obviously, if I'm trying to make this stuff at home, it makes it very hard to do the traditional winemaking in a regular house. So what kind of installations do you have in, you know, a big fancy winery like Mission Hill?
Well, I guess the hardest part for people to have at home, we process the equipment to process the grapes. Once you have the juice, it's slightly easier to do at home, and that's why the success of those kits where you get the juice. But unfortunately, the process that is used to produce those juice that you can buy on the grocery store really diminish the quality of the juice because it's a concentration and use heat, and that's not that good. Where the wineries, we can just extract the juice and put into fermentation directly without having to go through any of those processes. So I think the main difference having the equipment that you can use to de-stem. De-stem is the operation where you remove the green part of the bunch and you have the berries. And then cooling is very important, having the capacity to cool down a tank when it's fermenting to be sure that it is fermenting at a certain temperature is key for having a healthy and good wine as well. And then barrels as well. Like, you had to have like a big production to have barrels in your house. At least you had to think that one barrel is like 225 liters of wine. And to get that thoroughly, you need like quite a few hundreds of kilos of grapes at home. So it's very hard.
So how many liters of wine do you guys produce on a typical week?
Well, that's depend. I don't know. I can't give you the number because I don't know it by heart. But
are we talking about 20 bottles or like 200,000 bottles? Like, well, you know.
Yeah, it's an order of thousand. Yeah, a thousand of bottles. You have, like, normally have wineries during harvest, they work long, long hours. Like, we are here working 14, 16 hours, the winemakers, and the wineries that are running 24 hours during harvest, because you have to think that you have an equipment that's going to be used only for, let's say, 10 weeks a year. So it's very expensive to buy a lot of equipment to try to process things in only 8 hours a day, when you're going to be using only 10 weeks a day. 10 weeks a year.
Yeah.
So that is that you try to maximize that, running the winery almost 24 hours or 24 hours a day.
And especially with our winter, we have a very short season, right? So.
Yeah, well, that's what happened last year, that we started kind of late, and then we have a frost. When you have a frost in the vineyards, all the leaves falls and basically the plant shut down. It's like going to sleep for the rest of the winter. So those bunches that remains in the vines are at risk to get rotten, and definitely you need to pick them as soon as you can. And that make a lot of pressure, definitely. Unless you want to make ice wine, what is a complete different story, and you will be happy with that.
Yeah. So a couple more questions before we move on to the juicy part of the interview is, what's the big difference from a boxed wine, the quality of a boxed wine, to a, you know, a $50 bottle of wine?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So the general when making, like, is, if you see the pictures, you can say it's the same. It went through fermentation. You add some yeast to make the fermentation. Now, the big difference is the quality of the food that you use. So you're going to start, because the cost is different and the margin that you make in a box is so small, you have to produce a lot of kilos of grape in the vineyards. So you have more like a dilution, like the quality of your food is lower. You don't have that concentration, but you're thinking, okay, I'm going to make a lot of these wines. Where the $50 bottle, let's say, you definitely have to justify. You have to produce something that is good, that consumers are willing to pay for that. So you're going to start in the vineyards. You're going to do a lot of different practices, like removing some leaves to expose the bunches. You're going to leave less fruit. That might mean that you have to drop fruit, like when the fruit, you have the green bunches, they haven't ripe yet. You do a counting and you say, okay, you know what? We're having too many bunches per vine. We're going to drop 50% of that. Basically, you are throwing fruit to the floor that you won't pick, so that has a big cost, plus the cost of sending the people to do that labor, because all that is done manually. You cannot do it with machine. Now, you know that doing that, you're going to have grapes that are going to have then good concentration that then you can use to make a wine that first you're going to go, for example, to put in barrels, they're going to hold in barrels for a certain period of time, and then that you can put in a bottle and consumers are going to appreciate it and they're going to be willing to pay the price that you're asking for.
Very cool. Speaking of wine, what's your favorite grape these days?
Here in Okanagan, I really like Pinot Noir and Riesling. I think, especially in the north part of the valley, I think those two varieties are the ones that have the great potential, and I really enjoy every time I have the chance to work with them.
Very nice. And what about in Argentina?
Well, people think about Malbec. I really like the Malbec from Argentina, definitely. But I really like Cabernet Franc and Bonarda. I think those two varieties are working very well there. And I hope that here in Canada we can get more of those wines because they're outstanding.
Well, let's work on that. So before I let you go, there's a couple of questions I ask everyone with respect to the podcast. This has been it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's one of those things. You're so knowledgeable in the wine making aspects that I can, you know, we can go on and talk about this another hour or so. But I know you're a busy guy. You got to go back to making some good wine. But before we leave, one question I ask all my guests: what does wellness mean to you? You can incorporate one to this, but wellness in general, what does it mean to you?
Oh, wow. I think wellness means to me to be good, not only with ourselves, but with everything that is around us. It's like to be in equilibrium and harmony with ourselves and with our family, friends, and especially with nature. That's the way I would put it.
I like it. It's and obviously, usually that means enjoying a glass of wine every once in a while, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When you want to be good with your family and friends, you need to spend time with them.
Yeah.
And there's no better way to do it than having a glass of wine.
Yeah, of course. You're drinking the Kool-Aid. It's great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time. And again, what I'm hoping to do is get you on for a part two down the road and get a couple people to ask some specific questions about the winemaking and then kind of get, because a lot of people don't have access to someone like you who does this for a living. You know, like this is your day-to-day, working in the vineyards and doing quality control and doing all this stuff. So I really appreciate your time. So if people have any questions, where can they get you on the social networks?
They can find me in LinkedIn under my name, Leandro Nosal. I'm also on Twitter with, I think it's my name, Leandro Nosal, at LEANOSAL.
Okay, I'll link some of that.
I'm more than keen to answer any question. I love speaking about wine, so.
Yeah, I could probably get that from the last half hour or so. So, again, thank you so much. It was nice to catch up and chat some wine, and I'm hoping to have you on a little bit later, maybe after this batch has been fermented.
Absolutely.
And we can chat about wine some more.
Yeah, and we can talk how the 2017 season went. And thank you for having me, Eric. I really appreciate that.
No problem. You've been listening to Wellness Wednesdays. I am your host, Eric Collard. Until next week, be well.